what really changed injuries on the battlefield was the introduction of gunpowder projectiles and explosive projectiles, which produced severe tissue damage compared to perhaps a blunt injury in medieval times or a cutting injury. And this tissue destruction left a lot of dead and dying tissue in the area of the wound, and this made the patient susceptible to bacterial infection, which of course was not yet understood. So anaerobic and aerobic bacteria, that is bacteria that can live with oxygen and those can live without, would combine to produce severe challenges to the patient and the surgeon. Straightforward erysipelas or streptococcal infection, staphylococcal abscesses, or what we now call synergistic gangrene, or French call puriture d'hôpital, which was hospital gangrene, which was a rapidly spreading infection caused by a combination of bacteria, which would often cause the patient to succumb at an early stage. And obviously the only type of treatment here known at this time, at the time of the Napoleonic Wars, was to amputate the limb or drain pus if the patient should live long enough for pus to be formed. Pus was known as laudable pus. In other words, if you lived long enough for an abscess to form in an infected area, that was a praiseworthy event. And often patients succumbed within a week of surgery due to ascending infection from the wound. We have soft tissue injuries. Skin, muscle and fat can be cut by sabers. They can be stitched up or just bandaged. At this time, not only stitches of silk or linen were used, but also sticky tapes, just as we use today in the casualty department. And these were linen strips impregnated with adhesive material to draw the edges of a wound together. Then bruised wounds would just be observed. Sometimes painkillers would be given. The treatment of pain was very poor, and the amount of laudanum or opium given to a regiment or ship was not huge, and probably just a few doses were given to each patient after an episode which was painful. Piercing wounds, well, arrows, lances, swords piercing the body, if they happened to strike an organ that was important, could be instantly fatal. Also the head and neck. And then there were fractures of bones. A bone fracture was often compound at this time. Compound fracture means that the bone end was protruding through the skin. And that is an extremely dangerous situation because of the risk of infection into the bone. Osteomyelitis, which is what infection of the bone is called, could be acute and could clear up, or it could be chronic, which was very common. And the bone kept being destroyed by the infection or sepsis, and it would try and form new bone, and dead bits of bone without a blood supply would be shed from the body. These were called sequestra and was a particularly common problem after amputation or limb injury. Most injuries that presented to a surgeon came on the limbs because often head, neck, abdominal and chest wounds were instantly fatal. But there were examples of survival with these. So limb injuries were twice as common in the leg as in the arm. And therefore, there was a chance of survival. Surgery was undertaken usually in the sitting position, unless the patient was unconscious or had a head injury. And the patient would be restrained and the operation carried out. It would be extremely painful. Unfortunately, most patients fainted. They called this syncope at this time, and they would be supported while fainting, and the surgeon would have to perform his operation with great speed. And in fact, when I began training as a surgeon in the late 1960s, speed was still regarded as a positive attribute to surgery. But of course, now we have anaesthesia, there's less need for that. But speed was also necessary to minimise suffering, reduce bleeding, and often a heavy workload for the surgeon.